The Marquis de Villeduval's debts were alarming. He took no notice of his financial advisers, who told him that he was on the verge of bankruptcy. What matter if funds were low? He would simply raise the rents on his estate. In the meantime, he would just have to borrow more from Count Kaliovsky, who never blinked an eye at the outrageous sums the Marquis requested. This was how he had financed the building of his newest property, a small chateau halfway between Paris and Versailles, which allowed him easy access to the court and the capital. His taste was superb, the bills always shocking. That evening, the Marquis was holding a supper party to thank Count Kaliovsky for his continuing generosity. The guest list included the great and the good of French society, dukes, princes, counts, cardinals, and bishops. Like the Marquis, they all had good reason to be grateful to the Count. In return for his constant generosity, Kaliovsky simply asked for those tiny little secrets, the kind of thing you wouldn't even say in the confessional box. All you had to do was whisper them to him, and absolution was guaranteed. The money given. He kept his friends like pampered lapdogs. They never suspected that the hand that fed them had also bought their souls. Many rumors circulated about Kaliovsky, which he encouraged. When asked his age, he would say he was as old as Charlemagne. When asked about his great black wolfhound Balthazar, he would say that he had never been without the dog. One thing, though, was certain. Many were his mistresses, and no one was his wife. The secret of his success lay in the absence of emotion. Over the years, he had learnt how to empty himself of sentiment, to keep himself free of passion. Love he considered to be a blind spot on the map of the soul. He had an ironclad heart. His motto was one that should have warned all who knew him of his true nature. Have no mercy, show no mercy. For the Marquis's part, he was in awe of the Count. If he was honest with himself, something he avoided at all costs, he was more than a little jealous of him. Tonight, though, he wanted to impress the Count. Nothing had been spared to make the celebration a success. He had even gone to the trouble of having his daughter brought home from her convent to satisfy a whim of the Count, who had asked to see her. Why, he could not imagine. For he considered her to be a mark of imperfection upon his otherwise perfect existence. The Marquis's splendid new chateau stood testament to his secretive nature and his sophisticated taste. Each of its many salons was different. Some were painted with scenes of the Elysian fields. In others, there were gilded rococo mirrors that reflected the many crystal chandeliers. On the first floor, all the salons opened up into one another through double doors with marble columns. The effect was a giddy vista of rooms, each one more opulent than the last. But behind the grand facade lay what no eye saw, the narrow, dark, pokey corridors that formed the unseen and unsightly varicose veins of the house. They were for the servants' use only. The Marquis liked to fancy that an invisible hand served him. And so his army of footmen and maids performed their tasks quietly in felted slippers, like mice behind the skirting boards. On the day of the party, the Mother Superior told Sido that she was wanted at her father's new chateau. It had been 2 years since she'd last seen him, and for a moment she wondered if he had been taken ill. Her memory of her father was of a cold, unloving man, who had little time for his daughter. Sido had grown into a shy, awkward-looking girl who walked with a limp, an unforgivable impediment which reflected badly on the great name of Villeduval. She'd lost her mother when she was only 3, and for most of her 12 years she'd been brought up at the convent. The Marquis had handed her over to the Mother Superior at the tender age of 5, with instructions to teach the girl to be less clumsy, to walk without limping, if such a thing were possible. Sido's surprise at finding she was going to the chateau just for a supper party filled her with excitement and trepidation. As the the convent doors closed behind her, she hoped passionately that she would never have to see the place again, that this might be the start of a new life, where her father would love her at last. Her happiness soon vanished as her father's coach made its way along the country roads. In the thin blue watery light, figures seemed to rise out of the snow like ghosts, given shape only by the rags they were wearing. They trudged silently along the side of the road with grim determination. Old men, young men, women carrying babies, grandmothers, small, weary children, all were ill-equipped for the bitter winter weather as they slowly and painfully made their way towards Paris. Cedo knocked on the roof of the carriage.
"We should stop and help,"
she called to Bernard, the coachman. The coach kept on moving.
"Please,"
Cedo called again.
"We must help them."
"The whole of France needs help,"
came the answer.
"Best not to look, mademoiselle."
But how is it possible to turn your eyes away from such a sea of sadness?